hello and welcome to this episode of The Lives and Styles of Old Hollywood. One of the most versatile and charming actors of his era, Tony Curtis captivated audiences for decades with his boyish good looks, magnetic charm, and impressive range. A star whose career spent over 50 years, Curtis is best remembered for his work in the 1950s and 1960s, where he became a Hollywood icon and appeared in a string of successful films across various genres. Whether playing suave leading men or comedic roles, Curtis was a star who could do it all. So Tony Curtis was actually born Bernard Schwartz on June the 3rd, 1925 in the Bronx, New York City, to Jewish immigrant parents from Hungary. His father was a tailor and his mother worked as a lace maker. The family faced financial struggle, so much so that Curtis and his younger brother Julius were placed in an orphanage for a month because the parents were unable to feed them. Their brother Robert was institutionalized with schizophrenia, as was their mother. Unfortunately, when Curtis was 12, Julius was struck and killed by a truck. In his younger years, Curtis was often involved in street fights and was part of neighborhood gangs. He probably would have gone down a road of delinquency and crime if not a neighbor had sent him to a Boy Scout camp, which helped him work off his energy and settle down. He attended Seward Park High School and at age 16 made his stage debut in a school play. Before dedicating more time to acting, though, he enlisted in the U.S. Navy after the attack on Pearl Harbor in World War II and served aboard a submarine tender until the end of the war. Thanks to the GI Bill, Curtis was able to attend college and study acting at the new school. While still at college, he got discovered by the influential Joy Selznick, not only the niece of famed producer David O. Selznick, but also a notable talent agent and casting director in her own right. So, in 1948, 23-year-old Curtis arrived in Hollywood and got signed by Universal. This is also when Bernard Schwartz became Tony Curtis. His first name was taken from the novel Anthony Edwards, and the last name was a variation of a name in his mother's family, Kurtz. The interesting thing is, Curtis himself did not feel very optimistic about his chances of success, saying, "I was a million to one shot, the least likely to succeed. I wasn't low man on the totem pole, I was under the totem pole, in a sewer, tied to a sack." In 1949, Tony Curtis made his uncredited film debut in Crisscross and had increasingly bigger parts in the following 2 years. Fan letters started pouring in, and so Universal put him in a starring role in 1951's The Prince Who Was a Thief. This movie became an instant hit and established Curtis as a lead actor, although mainly in B-movies. For the next 5 years, he paid his dues in various roles, from football player to criminal, race car driver to bank robber, in war films and in swashbucklers. It was only in 1955 that 31-year-old Curtis graduated to larger projects when co-starring with Burt Lancaster and Gina Lollobrigida in Trapeze, which became one of the biggest box office hits of that year. This was also the year that Curtis and his wife Janet Lee founded their own production company, Curt Lee Productions. A string of successful films throughout the 1950s and 1960s solidified Curtis as one of the most versatile and charismatic actors of his generation. His good looks and on-screen chemistry with actresses like Marilyn Monroe and Janet Lee made him a consistent box office draw. He starred in a western, played a gambler, a cop, and a scheming press agent. For 1957's Sweet Smell of Success, which actually was a box office disappointment, he received raving reviews for the first time in his career. His performance in 1958's The Defiant Ones garnered him an Academy Award nomination for his role as an escaped convict paired with Sidney Poitier. The film was a gripping drama about racism, and Curtis's performance showed a depth that went beyond his earlier heartthrob roles. One of his most iconic performances was in 1959's Some Like It Hot, in which he starred alongside Jack Lemmon and Marilyn Monroe. Curtis and Lemmon play two musicians who witness a mob hit and flee the scene by disguising themselves as women. Curtis's comic timing and ability to play against type made the role a standout in his career, just like Operation Petticoat opposite Cary Grant that same year. In 1960, he took on a supporting role in Spartacus, which was directed by Stanley Kubrick. Curtis played the role of Antoninus, a slave who becomes a key figure in the Roman rebellion against the Empire. The film was a monumental success, and Curtis starred alongside Kirk Douglas and Laurence Olivier in one of the most iconic films in Hollywood history. He continued with successful roles, mainly comedies, until the late 1960s, including the first motion picture filmed at Disneyland ever, which was called 40 Pounds of Trouble. He also filmed The List of Adrian Messager, Captain Newman MD, Wild and Wonderful, Sex and the Single Girl, The Great Race, Boeing Boeing, Not With My Wife, You Don't Drop Dead, Darling, Don't Make Waves, and On My Way to the Crusades, I Met a Girl Who. As some of these roles performed really poorly, Curtis fired his agent and actually took a pay cut to finally play a dramatic role once again. And that was 1968's The Boston Strangler, in which Curtis portrayed the infamous real-life serial killer Albert DeSalvo. This performance showcased Curtis' ability to take on serious and intense roles. Both the critics and the audiences loved it. Nevertheless, he continued to appear in a number of comedies. In the 1970s and beyond, Curtis's career began to slow down, but he remained a prominent figure in Hollywood. While he no longer starred in major blockbusters, he continued to appear in films and television shows throughout the decade. He found success in television with 1971's The Persuaders, a British television series in which he starred alongside Roger Moore. The series was relatively short-lived, but gained a cult following all around the world. He also took on smaller roles, for example in 1975's The Count of Monte Cristo and Lepke, as well as 1976's The Last Tycoon, 1977's Casanova and Co., and a co-starring role in the Aaron Spelling hit series Vegas. He also had a supporting role in Mae West's 1978 movie Sextet, in the horror film Manitou, and 1980's The Mirror Cracked. His last performances were in the documentary retrospective series Hollywood Babylon, for each episode of which he would recall anecdotes from his career. On the stage, 77-year-old Curtis last appeared in the 2002 national tour of Some Like It Hot, in which he played the supporting role of Osgood Fielding. One of the reasons for him not taking on too many roles from the 1980s onwards was his love for painting. As he said himself, "I still make movies, but I'm not that interested in them anymore, but I paint all the time." He actually became a well-regarded artist, with his paintings and artworks being exhibited in galleries across the United States. He spent his later years traveling the world, focusing on his art and private life, though he occasionally made public appearances and participated in film retrospectives. Tony Curtis's personal life was almost as dramatic as his career. He was married a total of 6 times, with his relationships often making headlines. His first marriage was to fellow actress Janet Leigh. They got married in 1951 at age 24 and 27 respectively, against the wishes of their studio Universal. Curtis was threatened with the end of his career, but the two eloped with friend Jerry Lewis as a witness. Throughout their 11-year marriage, they welcomed 2 daughters, actresses Kelly Curtis and Jamie Lee Curtis. Their marriage actually was tumultuous, and they eventually divorced in 1962. The reason, in the words of Tony Curtis, "For a while, we were Hollywood's golden couple. I was very dedicated and devoted to Janet and on top of my trade. But in her eyes, that goldenness started to wear off. I realized that whatever I wasn't enough for Janet. That hurt me a lot and broke my heart." Marriage number 2 was to 18-year-old German actress Christine Kaufmann, who had starred with him in Taras Bulbas. The couple had 2 daughters, Alexandra and Allegra, who also became an actress. The marriage ended 1968 in divorce, after 5 years together. The same year he got divorced, he married Leslie Ellen, with whom he had 2 sons, Nicholas Bernard Curtis, who died from a heroin overdose at age 23, and Benjamin Curtis. But this marriage also ended in divorce after 14 years together. Marriage number 4 was to Andrea Savio and lasted from 1984 until 1992, and marriage number 5 to Lisa Deutsch lasted only 1 year, from 1993 to 1994. His 6th and last marriage was to Jill Vandenberg, who was 45 years his junior. They met in 1993, but got married only in 1998. His comment on the age gap: "The age gap doesn't bother us. We laugh a lot. My body is functioning and everything is good. She's the sexiest woman I've ever known. We don't think about time. I don't use Viagra either. There are 50 ways to please your lover. They appeared together in the 2008 documentary, The Jill and Tony Curtis Story, about their efforts to rescue horses from slaughterhouses. Now that we've covered his relationships, we need to look at the health and death of Tony Curtis. As a young man, Tony Curtis was a heavy smoker, but he quit in the 1960s and even served as a president of the American I Quit Smoking Club. Nevertheless, he suffered from lung problems all his life. In 1979, 46-year-old Tony Curtis got arrested at London's Heathrow Airport for marijuana possession. 4 years later, he developed a heavy cocaine addiction, in addition to his alcoholism. In the mid-1980s, he was admitted to the hospital for advanced cirrhosis and entered the Betty Ford Clinic subsequently, which apparently was successful for him. In 1994, Curtis suffered a heart attack and underwent bypass surgery. In 2010, 76-year-old Curtis, who suffered from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, was hospitalized after an asthma attack. 2 months later, he died of cardiac arrest at his home on September the 29th in 2010. His remains were interred in Henderson, Nevada, where Curtis lived in his last years. Among his honorary pallbearers were Kirk Kerkorian, Kirk Douglas, and Phyllis McGuire. He took several of his favorite items with him into the grave, amongst them a Stetson hat, an Armani scarf, driving gloves, a copy of his favorite novel, and his iPhone. A scandal, though, erupted after his death. Apparently, he had rewritten his will 5 months before his death, named all his children, and disinherited all of them without explanation. His entire estate went to wife Jill Vandenberg. What was the style and image of Tony Curtis? So Tony Curtis was one of the most charming and handsome leading men of the 1950s and 1960s. His good looks, including his dark wavy hair and piercing blue eyes, made him a favorite of fans and critics alike. He had the ability to seamlessly transition from romantic leading man to tough guy to comedic genius, and this made him a truly versatile actor. While often typecast as the suave, charming man, Curtis's range and willingness to take on diverse roles, from comedies to intense dramas, allowed him to outgrow the typical heartthrob label. His on-screen presence was magnetic. Whether he was paired with Marilyn Monroe or Sidney Poitier, he held his own with every co-star and consistently delivered performances that were memorable for their depth and especially their likability. He had the image of a ladies' man and probably had his share of dalliances. But he was mainly the mischievous, attractive young man in comedies for the most part of his career. Some miscellaneous facts. In 1965, Tony Curtis was animated in an episode of The Flintstones. He also voiced this character, which was called Stony Curtis. In 1994, a mural featuring his likeness, painted by the artist George Botelli, was unveiled on the Sunset Boulevard overpass of the Hollywood Freeway Highway 101 in Los Angeles. The mural was relocated to Hollywood Boulevard and Branson Avenue in September 2011. Third miscellaneous fact, his face is featured among the celebrities on the cover of the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album by The Beatles. In 2005, Curtis was criticized after he stated that he would refuse to watch Brokeback Mountain. He additionally stated that John Wayne would not approve of a film about gay cowboys. Next, on May the 22nd, 2009, Curtis apologized to the BBC radio audience after he used 3 profanities in a 6-minute interview with BBC presenter William Crawley. The presenter also apologized to the audience for Curtis's Hollywood realism. Curtis explained that he thought the interview was being taped when in fact it was live. And a last miscellaneous fact. In 1990, Curtis and his daughter Jamie Lee Curtis took interest in their Hungarian Jewish roots and helped finance the rebuilding of the Great Synagogue in Budapest, Hungary, the largest synagogue in Europe today. 8 years later, he founded the Emanuel Foundation for Hungarian Culture and helped promote the image of Hungary in commercials. What are the life lessons of this wonderful actor? So, life lesson number 1, embrace your versatility. Curtis's career was defined by his ability to shift between genres. Whether it was a comedy, a drama, or a thriller, He proved that versatility is the key to longevity in any career. Niching down is not for everybody, although that seems to be touted as the holy grail in personal branding and marketing today. Yet, this is actually only applicable to machine learning algorithms who can only place you when you're crystal clear. People and real connections are made over more than one subject. We are interested in the many facets that others have. So don't stress yourself out if you are one of those that does not seem to fit a nice little niche or simply is not happy with it. Embrace your skills and talents and be that versatile shining star that you are meant to be. Curtis even became a painter after his very varied career and saved horses with his sixth wife. So yes, your life can be varied, it can be lived out in chapters, and you never need to stop reinventing yourself. Second life lesson, relationships matter. Despite his turbulent personal life, Curtis remained very close to his children, particularly his daughter Jamie Lee Curtis. The importance of family is a theme that played out both on and off the screen for Tony Curtis. And as social beings, our relationships in life matter a great deal. They shape who we are, they influence our thinking and our actions, and in many cases, our life. And that does not have to be family by blood necessarily. Without the friendly neighbor, Tony Curtis might have lived a life in crime, had become a petty gangster, and maybe had died without ever getting out of the Bronx. So whether it's family, friends, mentors, or just your community at large, we are all connected. And we need each other to shine and to fulfill our potential. Relationships do matter. And the last life lesson, addiction is deadly. Tony Curtis had many health troubles because of his addiction to drugs and alcohol. His smoking led to health issues even decades later. So don't think you are the exception. You are most probably just like everybody else, suffering the long-term effects of drug and alcohol consumption in the end. And it's never worth it. And that concludes the episode on Tony Curtis. I hope you enjoyed it. As usual, I love talking to you and I can't wait to do it the next time. Have the most wonderful week. Bye.